Find Your Inner Moose, Tips on Living the Good Life. Main storyteller Susan Poulin is the creator of Ida LeClaire, a character through which she offers self-help advice in a new book, Finding Your Inner Moose, Ida LeClaire's Guide to Living the Good Life. Ida LeClaire is a wife, a daughter, a sister, a friend, and a certified Maine life guide. Performer Susan Poulin has emerged as one of only a few women in the Boys Club of Maine Humor, who has based Ida on some of the women that she grew up with. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll talk with Susan Poulin and Ida LeClaire about living the good life, from the keys to a good marriage, to aging gracefully, to finding your inner moves. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Choral Arts Society, presenting Voices of Light with the Passion of Joan of Arc film and the Camerata Singers, September 29th, choralart.org.
And join the conversation, email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll talk with Susan Poulin in a moment, but first, meet Ida LeClaire from a book trailer video from publisher Islandport Press.
Hi there. My name's Ida, and I am a certified Maine life guide. I live in Mahoosick Mills, which is a small town in western Maine, with my husband Charlie and our little dog Scamp. We have a beautiful double-wide mobile home there. It's just adorable. So, a while back, Charlie and me are sitting in the den after supper, watching the tube and chatting, like you do, and we get to talking about moose and how hard they are to see in the dark. Unlike a deer, the whites of their eyes don't give them away, mostly because they don't bother to stop and stare at you. The saying doesn't go like a moose caught in the headlights, does it? No, when a moose sets its sights on something, it just goes for it. Sounds like someone else I know, Charlie quips. And who would that be, mister?
I'm looking right at her.
Well, I bet there's a lot we can learn about life from a moose.
Sure there is, Ida, Charlie says, humoring me. Why don't you look into it?
So I did. And you know what? Turns out you can learn a lot about life from a moose.
And now to the person who performs the character of Ida LeClaire, Susan Poulin. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So what can we learn about life from a moose?
Well, it turns out you can learn quite a bit. An easy one Ida starts off with is the word moose comes from the Algonquin Indian word for twig eater. So this ain't rocket science. Be like a moose and eat your fiber. But there's a lot of just about everything.
And we'll get into that in the course of the program today. You were born in Jackman?
I was born in Jackman, Maine.
And the reason I mention that is some people will question whether you were born here. There are some purists who say you have to be a Mainer to do Maine characters.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Are you a purist?
I don't make those kind of value judgments. I think that it's all about having a feel for the place. Once a friend of mine asked me, she lives in Colorado, but she was born in Wyoming, and she said, how long does it take for a landscape to get into your soul? And I think if you feel it in your soul, then you could probably do Maine humor.
But Ida is based on real people. Women,
mm-hmm,
that you knew growing up in western Maine.
I wanted to pay homage to those women, you know. I was how Ida came to me, the inspiration for Ida. I was in 1995, I think, entered a Yankee storytelling contest. And it was the first and, as far as I know, the only annual Yankee storytelling contest. And it took place in Keene, New Hampshire. And you could send a little cassette tape. That's how far along back we're thinking.
I remember that.
Yeah, you remember those? And I recorded this little story called The Stud Finder, which was about taking a new look at an old problem, finding a guy. And it was based on seeing this round lobster trap in Harpswell, Maine. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, a new look at an old problem. And I entered in the contemporary storytelling category. And there was traditional, and I was one of the few women in that category. There are more women in the children's and the song category. And I was hoping for most sexual innuendo in a Yankee yarn, which not much competition there. And I was blown away. I won my category, and I was in the finals on the stage at the Colonial Theater in Keene, and Tim Sample was hosting, and Bob Bryan was there, and I was the only woman on the stage.
And you were well received, and
yeah.
As I think we all know, this is sort of this traditionally has been kind of a boys' club.
Absolutely.
Was there any resistance to women being in this, or there just weren't women doing it?
There just weren't women doing it. You know, it was about guys in jeans and flannel shirts talking about their mothers-in-laws. And I thought it needed – and also I come from a theater background, not a pure storytelling background. So I was more interested in place, community, relationship, and also that Maine is more than just the coast, and it's more than just a Yankee sensibility.
A lot of these traditional stories and these mm-hmm. traditional characters that the men have done are these men of few words, but who in the end manage to outwit the arrogant city slicker. Ida's different in that she appears to live in the modern world.
Sure.
In a place that, as you say, is not the coast, and could be a real person. I mean, it's
yes.
not a stretch of the imagination.
She is a real person to me. Yeah.
Right. And lives in a modern world where the game is not just about outwitting city slickers, as we said, people from away, but it's about living real life mm-hmm. in Maine.
Yeah. And in this small town in western Maine, I deliberately set the town of Mahoosick Mills in Franklin County, and I made Ida Franco-American, which is my background. I don't relate to a Yankee sensibility. It's not like how I was raised.
Talk a little bit about the difference between the Yankee sensibility versus the Franco.
Yeah, I think of the Yankee sensibility as being frugal, both emotionally and financially. And the Franco-American has much more joie de vivre. And Ida's speaking faster than you would hear on the coast, because there are lots of different Maine accents. And she speaks with a Maine accent like a lot of my Franco-American relatives. But then she has characters like her Grampy Gilbert who speak with a Franco-American accent or a Canadian accent.
sorry to put you on the spot here,
sure.
But can you talk a little bit about the accent and some of the components of the Franco accent that you incorporate that aren't in the standard coastal accent that we hear so often?
So Ida would speak with a Maine accent like this, but then her Grampy Gilbert would speak more like this. So it's a Franco-American accent, so there's no THs because you don't have a TH, right, in French. But mostly it's the meter of the speech and the little expressions, you know, like how I grew up. You know, a bug was a bibit, like if you got bit by a black fly, it was a bibit. There are just little expressions.
An orange glass of juice.
Yeah. So it's also word order. Like when I talk with my dad, he speaks English very well. He was raised bilingually, but he speaks English very well. But I'll hear him say, he'll say something and then I'll say, that's it. That's it, right? So really what he's saying is, c'est ça. C'est ça. It's an expression, but he's doing it in English. So it's meter of speech.
I wonder, a few years ago there were, I can recall, Franco characters that, mm-hmm. that were scrutinized because there were some members of the Franco population were offended by the stereotype that mm-hmm. was being done. That's not what you're doing. You're not denigrating them.
The only people I might make fun of in my work are people from away. But the most important thing about Ida and Ida's world, because we see the world through her lens, is that she's a heart-centered character. When I stand as Ida, she has an elevated, heroic stance, and she really sees the world. That is her center of gravity is her heart.
I wondered if you could read a little section from the book.
Sure.
We were talking about Grampy, and on page 31, there's a section
about... I feel like I'm on Oprah or something.
I know.
This is really
well,
exciting.
You are kind of on Oprah.
Keith, you're cuter. You're cuter than Oprah.
You're too kind.
He's blushing.
I know. Yeah, I'm blushing on the radio.
Yes.
Today's a new day, which is kind of, you know, in keeping, it's sort of within the theme of this advice about living life. Mm-hmm. And you are talking about how Grampy, this Franco character, views life kind of in the same way that he views fishing. So if you would.
When we were going fishing, I'd lay out my clothes the night before and my mother'd set the alarm for 5. Didn't need it, though. I was up early and ready. Never late Grampy'd drive up in his battered old pickup truck. I'd grab my gear, my lunch bag, and off we'd go. Early on, I hadn't developed a feel for fishing yet. I'd see how many fish Grampy'd catch, and I'd get discouraged, you know? Start thinking the fish were conspiring against me, deliberately choosing Grampy's line over mine. I'm never gonna catch any fish, I'd whine, like kids do, you know? Mon petit chou, he'd say. My little cabbage. Doesn't sound like a term of endearment, but it is. Mon petit chou, if you think like that, that's what you're gonna get. Me, I think, today's a new day. I can't wait to see how many fish I'm gonna catch.
So this book, in as much as it is funny and developing the characters and visiting the characters and the places, it really is, though, also a book offering advice on how to live life.
Yeah.
From a Mainer's perspective, a real Mainer's perspective.
Yeah, it has a lot of not only the moose and what we can learn from them, but good old-fashioned commonsensical advice. And I think that we need that right now.
Well, I was going to say, was this a vehicle you chose to do your humor, or did you really want to offer a book that gave advice about or guidance on life?
Both. I think... I was really interested in the concept of, we see life coaches on TV all the time, but they all look a certain way. And what is it like? Ida has a lot of good old-fashioned commonsensical knowledge. She has a high school education, but she's really smart. And we don't see that. We don't see that personality that much on the stage, and we don't see it certainly in the form of self-help.
And one of the key tenets to this, though, is... based on my reading of it, is to, you know, stop scrutinizing or looking at your life under a microscope and simply live it.
Yeah, that happened in the first Ida show that I did, Ida Woman Who Runs with the Moose, because I have 5 plays as Ida. And in that, she and her friends, Celeste, Rita, Betty, Dot, and Shirley, just like one word, the women who run with the moose go to a women who run with the wolves study group. And as Ida says, those gals were pretty much drop-dead serious. They weren't no fun if they tripped over it. And that's what I love about Ida. She's game to try new things without a value judgment. Her feeling is if you have fun doing something, even if it doesn't turn out the way you planned, you still had a good time. And I really wanted to show in that play that you can be happy with your life and not be shallow and stupid. Because I think a lot of us think we have to be working at it all the time. We have to be working at our relationship with our husband, working at our relationship with our friend. And Ida just does it.
She also gets to visit some new age concepts by having, conveniently, a niece named Caitlin.
Caitlin. I love Caitlin. Caitlin, as Ida is me, Caitlin is me too. And Ida's... Ida doesn't have children herself, but this is her sister's daughter who just turned 30 and cute as a button, even with the nose ring. And she's up on all the new agey stuff. She works at Mahusik Health Food, and she does feng shui consulting on the side. In fact, she came to feng shui Ida's double wide, and Ida found out that her wealth area was in the toilet, which can't be good. And Caitlin's great because it's really – Ida is just so willing to try new things. She's meditated with Caitlin. She's gone to yoga class. And Caitlin has little sections in the book called Caitlin's New Age Nook, where she does more Ida would call them woo-woo exercises, visualizations and stuff. And then Aunt Ida tweaks it. So then she takes it and puts it into a much easier context to do.
Much more usable and
much more
accessible.
Ida is user-friendly.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a short break. Susan Poulin is our guest. She's creator, performer, and creative force behind Ida LeClaire. And Poulin is the author of Finding Your Inner Moose, Ida LeClaire's Guide to Living the Good Life. We'd like to hear from you when we come back. Your comments and questions, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the first comprehensive genetic analysis of breast cancer is reshaping our understanding of the disease, pointing the way to a cure. We'll get the latest. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point this evening at midnight.
Next time on the TED Radio Hour, the power of crowds.
Media is increasingly more a site of coordination because groups that see or hear or watch or listen to something can now gather around and talk to each other as well.
What is the true potential of 21st century collaboration? Find out next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Southport Marine on Casco Bay, taking reservations for winter haul-out and storage, rigging specialist and yacht broker on-site, southportmarine.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, a visit with Ida LeClaire. Ida is the creation of Susan Poulin, a performer. We'd like to hear from you as well. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Ida is married.
Yes.
To Charlie. Tell us about Charlie.
Charlie is Ida's high school sweetheart, and he graduated third out of his class of six. From Mahoosick Mills High, and he works down at the mill. He's a foreman now, just like Ida works at the A&P. So they just have regular jobs, and they have a really great relationship.
How so? Is it the simplicity? What is it about that relationship?
They genuinely like each other. And they do, I have a whole chapter in the book on marriage. A good marriage begins with please and thank you, which was a lot of how I was raised, you know. And my husband and I do this today, and certainly Ida and Charlie do, that, you know, if my husband mows the lawn, I'll say thanks for mowing the lawn. And he'll say thanks for doing the dishes. And I think we lose track. I mean, that's the kind of simple thing that can make a huge difference in your life.
You also say that if your spouse is annoying the heck out of you, to do something nice for them.
Oh, yes. I would say this is counterintuitive, as they say. But if Charlie is just bugging the hell out of me, I usually make him a batch of his favorite cookies because it makes you feel better to do something nice for someone. And if you still don't feel better at the end, at least you have the cookies. It's very practical. But it does make you feel better. And that is also a part in there's a chapter on self-care, although it doesn't that's not the title of it. That's based on the moose fact that moose can feed at the bottom of a lake for up to a minute, and then they swim to the surface, still chomping on the tasty green stuff they find down there. So it's about diving deep and returning with nourishment. That sometimes when you're feeling you're worse, the thing that'll get you out of it is to do something nice for someone.
Throughout the book, you also there are just sort of observations.
Yes.
About what happens to you in the course of life.
Yeah.
And in the case of Charlie, he gets old man feet.
Yes, where your big toenails are tenting up and starting to turn yellow. And that's the kind of conversation they can have. And Ida's reply to that would be, let me show you my bunion. And he says, sweet talker. So there's a lot. You can tell that they have a great sex life. You know, that's really good to see on stage mushing, and in the book. Without being overly mushy.
So this seems like a simple message, but to some people, the realization that, for example, you're getting old man feet could be the cause of a huge problem, a big dark cloud. It's going to ruin your day. It might even make you, you know, spin down into a dark place. Yeah. For these characters, it's a point to share a moment and laugh. Is that the sort
of... And I think, you know, by talking about these things, you find out that you're not alone, because it's the things that we do to ourselves in private, you know, the Ben and Jerry's that you eat over the kitchen sink in the middle of the night that make you feel bad. But if you tell your friend about that, you feel better. And Ida is your friend, you know, and she's talking about these things.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones and to Bucksport and Valerie. Hi, Valerie. Welcome to the program.
Valerie.
Yes. Sorry about that, Valerie. I didn't click on you.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I have a question. I'm French, 100%, 110, grandparents.
Oh, me too.
Grandparents all the way. In fact, my great-grandfather was a Canadian Mountie, and he came down through Maine. And
wow.
So, but we have these little expressions, and you just said one, and it made me think, Babit.
Right?
I was married. I'm married to a Polish, and he thinks all these little words that I use I just made up. So when you said "bibiet," it went aha! It is a bug. Now I have a couple more, like "krimush." Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know what that is.
Well, he doesn't either. And what about "ginig"?
Ginig, no.
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 Are you? Are your family from Acadia, or from Quebec?
Quebec.
Quebec,
yeah.
I don't know that, but we might have more Franco-Americans calling in.
Oh, good.
That's right.
Okay, maybe somebody's heard of these other words.
Yeah.
Do you have any more words, you know, like babit?
Babit, piton.
Ah, piton?
Yeah, piton, which is a little button.
Oh.
is that a term of endearment? Or?
No, it's just like a little button. Like,
it's literally a little button.
Lock the door, hit the piton.
I see.
Hit the piton.
We used to say piton.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be at a lot of Franco, like at the Franco American Center at UMO reading in October, and at the Franco American Collection in Lewiston as well in October.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Are there other Franco characters that are prominent in Maine theater or literature?
Well, there are Franco's writing all the time. I get together with a group of Franco-American artists, and we try to do a gathering once a year. And it's more about there are poets, there are lots of Franco-American writers. It's getting the word out and being visible. And Franco-Americans have been quiet for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And we're 40% of the state can trace their heritage back to French-speaking Canada. When I'm writing, I'm using French names, at least that much. And certainly the culture weaves in and out of the books. It's really important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Valerie, we were talking earlier about the difference between the kind of Yankee Maine accent and the Franco accent. Do you have more of a Franco accent, do you think? Or
I have a mix, I think. I'm 75. I've lived in Maine almost all my life. But I had grandparents lived across the street. So I think I have a maybe 50-50.
Yeah. Right. So many. Interesting. Well, okay. Valerie, thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Valerie. It was nice to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
A bientôt.
And that's it. That's it. 1-800-399-3566. Tweet at Maine Calling. Email talk@mpbn.net or post to our Facebook page. Let's talk about the setting, the town that Ida lives in. Is that also drawn upon your experience growing up?
It started off that Mahoosick Mills was a combination of Jackman and Westbrook, where I moved when I was 8 years old, and the names of places. But it has grown. I write a blog once a week, Just Ask Ida, justaskida.com. And every week I write a blog and a podcast. So it's a short story every week. And the town has grown exponentially. You know, I'll need somebody to get to the transfer station. Or what does Main Street look like? And the Busy Bee Bakery, that it has started to flesh out. And I actually have to stop and kind of draw it out on a piece of paper.
In some fictional treatments of mm-hmm. these, you know, inland Maine mill towns, they're sometimes painted as, you know, desperate, dark places where better times were, you know, when the mill was open. Now the mill shut down. People are there because that's where their roots are, but there's nothing else, and the kids are leaving. You don't see it that way. This is Ida's home. She's
yes.
happy to be there.
She's happy to be in Mahoosick Mills. She loves Mahoosick Mills. And I love Maine. I love that small town Maine. I'm passionate about the state of Maine, in fact. You know, I miss it when I'm away. I miss the way the trees look by the water and the mountains and just the people, the meter of the speech. And so in some ways, Mahoosick Mills is affected by the outside world. But then it also is, there is a sort of bright, shiny, idyllic quality to it as well. So it's a combination of also memories I have growing up in Jackman. It's a hybrid form for me. Yeah.
What are your memories of Jackman?
Well, my memories of Jackman, we lived on, as you went over the Moose River, Bridge of Moose River, we had a auto parts store right beside the river on the first floor, and our apartment was on the second floor. And my grandmother lived across the street, and she had a general store and gas station. And that was the house that she was born in. And 2 miles away, my other grandparents lived. So it's so wrapped up in love and memories for me that it's even hard for me to go through it now because it doesn't look like how it looked when I was a child.
I was going to say, how has it changed?
Yeah, I have a play called Pardon My French where I look, French was my first language, and then I lost it when I was about 3 years old. And I wrote a play about the journey of trying to relearn French, and I go through Jackman. And in it, I talk about how your adult eyes see what isn't there. You see the people who aren't there. You see the strangers. You see the chipped paint or whatever. And that's not what a person who lives there would see. It's just like, it's not how it was. And so it kind of flickers in and out for me of how it was then and how it is now.
And in terms of the culture, the society, has that changed?
I don't know. Because, you know, my relatives are only in the cemetery. It's such a beautiful place, though. The lake is beautiful, but it's very emotionally loaded for me.
And it sits literally on the cusp between
15 miles.
Yeah. So it's a symbolic sort of occupies a symbolic geographical position between these two places that share so much.
It is the place that the immigrants came through. And, you know, like most Franco-Americans, I can't even tell you what generation I am because our families went back and forth. In fact, when my dad, up until the age of 6, he lived on the Canadian line during Prohibition with his dad had a bar in Canada and a house in the United States, and he'd cross that line every day. And I think even a corner of the house was in Canada. So that's the kind of thing. And that weaves through all those things weave through the book, you know.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation with performer Susan Poulin. You said a few moments ago that French was your first language and that you lost it. What happened? Did you not speak it at home anymore?
Both my parents are bilingual, and they were going to raise us bilingual. And at about the time when I was 3, my grandfather died, who was Canadian, and my sister was there. It's difficult to raise children bilingually. And then this is a very common problem that you don't hear talked about very much that is a big topic of conversation when you get together with Franco-Americans. And so there's a bilingual subtraction so that there's a space like an ache where the language used to be. And if I'll be in a room with English speakers and French speakers, even though I can't understand them, my heart is with the French speakers and my head is with the English speakers. And then only recently did I realize that my body of work as a writer I have 10 plays. 5 is Ida, 5 is myself. So 5 is myself, college educated, married to a mural artist, good public radio listener. And Ida LeClaire, high school graduate, lives in a small town in Maine, very connected to that Franco-American place that I can't always access. And so it's just not an accident that that happened.
All right, we're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm Ray Suarez. Coming up on America Abroad,
the number one thing that either Obama or Romney needs to do to help the world is to help the American economy.
4% of Americans believe that foreign affairs is an important part of the campaign decision for them this year.
The next president, foreign policy challenges on the next America Abroad from Public Radio International.
Join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Dear Lord, please let this date be good. May he have the wealth of Mayor Bloomberg, the personality of Jon Stewart, the face of Michael Fassbender.
On the next Fresh Air, Mindy Kaling. She plays a single doctor whose personal life is a mess and who struggles to do the right thing in the new show, The Mindy Project. Join us.
Tune in for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, performer Susan Poulin is with me to talk about Ida LeClaire and finding your inner moose. Susan is the creative force behind the Ida LeClaire character. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We'll go back to the phones in a moment. We want to hear from Charmin in Portland. But first, I wondered if you could read another segment from your new book and sort of set it up for us, if you would, as well.
This is in a section on self-care, but Ida's talking about how taking care of yourself means showing up with integrity in your life, whether people are watching or not. And Ida is a cashier at the A&P, so she's using that to make her point. They say the eyes are the mirror of the soul, but I got to tell you, from a cashier's point of view, there's no better place to size up someone's personality than the express lane. 14 items or less, to most people, means just that. It's a courtesy to the rest of the shoppers. You got more items than that, you line up with the shopping cart people, okay? There are special circumstances, of course. You know, there's a long line at all the other registers, and you got more than 14 items, and you're in a hurry. So you stand in the express lane, sweating a little, feeling guilty. But you need to get home and cook dinner and get Becky off to band practice. Who hasn't been there? Long as it doesn't happen every week, I'm willing to let it slide. But how about those chronic offenders? Folks who read 14 items or less as 14 kinds of items or less. We've all been behind these guys. In their head, they're counting 12 yogurts as one item. So there's the 12 yogurts, 2 half gallons of milk, 6 Lean Cuisine frozen dinners, 4 cans of cat food, 3 1-liter bottles of diet root beer, and 9 other items, which somehow adds up to 14. In my opinion, if the IRS wants to know who's probably cheating on their taxes, all they have to do is hang around the express lane. Enough said.
Enough said indeed. let's go to the phones now to Charmin in Portland. Hi, Charmin.
Hi, Susan. You've made me laugh, and you've also brought tears to my eyes.
Thanks, Charmin.
Hi.
Hi.
I grew up in Moscow, Maine.
Oh, that's really close to Jackman.
That's right. You would have driven right by my house on your way there.
On our way to the big city, Skowhegan.
It's an interesting place to be from, and my mother's name was also Ida, and all of my relatives, like yours, are in the cemetery.
Yeah.
I did take a trip home this week, this summer, for Bingham's bicentennial, and it was really striking to me to think these are my roots. This is where I grew up, even though most of my adult life has been in the Portland area. And you're just sweet.
Well, thank you, Carmen. Charmin, right?
Yeah. Charmin. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to meet you. I'm going to be at the Portland Library on October 3rd reading at the Brown Bag Lecture Series at noontime.
Oh.
If you have nothing planned, come see me. I'd love to meet you in person.
Oh, thank you so much. I will put that in my calendar.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sherman.
Nice talking with you.
1-800-399-3566. We're talking with performer Susan Poulin. Let's go to Littleton and Stephen. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I live in Littleton, which is just north of Holton. It's the next town north in the county. And I've lived in Littleton for about 7 years, and I am from away, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And my question, I love the culture. I love Maine. I've even told my wife, I said, if we ever move again from here, I think I'd rather move out of the United States because I've lived all over in various places. I love Maine. I love the culture. I love the area.
Yay.
My question is, what is it in the culture that makes, you know, the locals look at people from away, so to speak? Any ideas?
Well, we said at the top of the show that you were not judgmental of that.
Yeah.
If people were into the state and they were nice to it.
Yeah, then... So your soul is already a Mainer, so you passed the test there. But you have to live, to a lot of purists, you have to be here your whole life, you know?
Yeah. But I guess my thought is, you know, not to look at it in a judgmental way and, you know, like a separation, but what is it in the culture that would tend to make them feel so attached or, you know, with the place or with their roots here that would make them kind of look at things in a separate way? I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, which is very liberal and very transient, as opposed to this area is a lot more rooted in a very different way, and that's what I'm just curious about, if you have any insight on the inner workings of the culture, you know.
Part of it, isn't it, Susan, that every summer there was an influx of people from a different place who shared the space and then left again, and it was almost sort of written into some of the patterns of yearly life that were visitors and they left, and there were visitors and they left, and there was an us and them kind of worldview that developed.
Ida talks about this in the book on the power of a positive attitude, how that there are some people who just love to be miserable. And a lot of – she says, you know, I used to work at Henderson's Lodge and Cabin up on Moose Megantic Lake, and we'd have people from away who would come for a week, a month, some the whole summer. Most folks were real nice, but some were just flat out committed to being miserable. This egg isn't cooked right. What do you mean you don't have phones in the room? The loons are keeping me up at night. I mean, come on. You're in Maine. There's just no pleasing some people is what I thought at first. But then it dawned on me. These folks love being miserable, so maybe I am pleasing them. In fact, I bet I made their day. So I think that there's certainly this quality of like there's something about living through the winter together. And facing those storms and helping your neighbor out with the snowblower and the power going out. I think there's something bonding about that. And somebody from away like yourself who actually lives through the winter in Littleton, it gives you a different cachet than a person who comes in and sails their boat in, who, thank God they come. We love them. But that's a different thing. So I think it comes from the ruggedness of the place itself.
If I may, do you think it is maybe partly like the dedication to stay? Because I've noticed that same thing, too, is that, you know, since I've been here a number of winters, there's like this thing of, oh, yeah, we'll see if they make it through the winter.
Sure.
It's a test.
I've heard that a number of times.
And you've passed.
Yeah, that's right, Stephen. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with that, Stephen. We've got a few minutes left, so we're going
to thanks for calling in.
Try to work in another call. Let's go to Penobscot and Sonny. Hi, Sonny. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Go ahead, please.
Great. No, I just want to talk about my mother's memories.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Uh, Yeah, I'm sorry, Sonny. We're having a difficulty with the phone connection. I apologize. Let's go to Wyndham and Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
Hi.
Your timing couldn't be more perfect. I'm driving to Lewiston, Auburn to go to school to study English, and I'm wondering, what am I doing? I want to learn French, my native language. I, too, am from Jackman, Maine. My full name is Amy Beth Brochu. I'm sure you know some Brochus.
Yes.
So hearing you, and you're very humorous, so I want to discover your work, but my question really is, where are you in your quest to learn French, and where did you do that?
Well, I did it. You know, the thing about bilingual subtraction like that, how you lose it is very complicated, and how you get it back is complicated. People who speak a heritage language, like the language we learned where you don't learn to write it, you learn it around the kitchen table. That language stays in your head, but it's booby-trapped. There are emotional booby-traps. So by going to a regular classroom, you're learning English as a second language. And that is the problem. What you're trying to do is recover English as that was your first language. It's a different thing. And you have to find your way around the booby traps that are in your head. For me, I wasn't even able to start to learn till I surrendered to the fact that I was never going to learn French. For me, that was the way to do it. And then I could start from scratch, as opposed to going into a classroom and thinking I was going to learn the entire language in 6 weeks. And finding, for me, it was important to find a teacher who was from Canada and not, who was teaching a standard French, but who would also respect a wide variety of kinds of French, okay. Meaning more colloquial expressions.
Right, because there's sort of a main French in and out.
Yeah, and it's even different in the county than it is in Lewiston. You know, there are different dialects, but we have to just move away from that sense of bad French, good French, to just speaking French without those value judgments.
Got about a minute left. Let's go to Jane in Booth Bay Harbor. Hi, Jane.
Hello. I have one question, but first I want to say that I think you're doing a wonderful service to all of us.
Thank you.
To be Mainers. my accent is from Portland, Castine, and points in between, but I went to school in Lewiston for 4 years, so I know of where you speak. I have a question about one phrase. Have you ever heard the phrase Bousy Rouge? And the reason I ask is a friend who is half Yankee and half Franco-American went to California and got involved in writing a book that was called Showdown at the Bousy Rouge, which was a bar. And he asked his Franco-American father what it meant, and he didn't know.
Yeah. Do you know, Jane?
No.
No, I'm at a loss, Jane.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But that's a good research thing for someone.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Jane.
Thanks for your kind words, Jane.
And anyone who knows what Bousy Rouge is, let us know. Susan Poulin, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, we had such a great time. Today. Thanks for having me.
Susan Poulin is the creator, performer, and creative force behind Ida LeClaire and the author of Finding Your Inner Moose, Ida LeClaire's Guide to Living the Good Life. Susan lives in Elliott, Maine, and runs Pool Isle Productions, a theatrical performance company, with her husband. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Maine's 2nd District Congressional candidate, Kevin Ray. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.